Hello, Exopolitics listeners. I'm R.V. Romero, Stellar Artistic Director of Exopolitics Radio. I'd like to thank you all for listening to our show and for taking an interest in the evolution of our planet and our species through Exopolitics Radio and the study of law and order in the universe. For over a year now, I've enjoyed working closely with your elusive host, Alfred Weber, on this fine production that we're proud to broadcast on a weekly basis and post free of charge on our website. Currently, I'm happy to say that in the last 90 days, ExopoliticsRadio.com has been visited by people in over 56 countries and 492 cities around the globe, including all 50 states in the U.S. During that time, we've averaged over 5,000 podcast downloads per show, and we're adding listeners every week with affiliates at Paranormal Radio, the Revere Radio Network, and most recently, Kansas City Online Radio. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you an update on how our show is progressing, and also to let you know that indeed, the number of intelligent people here on Earth who are catching on to the fact that there are other intelligent life forms in the universe is growing. And Exopolitics Radio is proud to be on the cutting edge of this revelation by reporting news and providing the insight and perspectives that you can't find anywhere else on the radio, in the newspapers, or on the television. We want to continue bringing you Exopolitics Radio both online and on air free of charge, as we always have, because we believe in the message and the content. However, as a studio and production team, we do have routine expenses which must be maintained in order to do so. It pains us to ask, and I promise we won't do it often, but if every listener online donated $1 a month, that would completely cover our production costs for the show and the immense amount of time spent doing research, interviews, and production time given graciously by our host. Of course, not every listener is going to be able to donate $1 or donate on a monthly basis, so if you could consider donating a little bit more, that would be a tremendous help and allow us to continue adding more and more affiliates, creating new programs, interviews, and materials, and most importantly, continue broadcasting this message of hope and truth around the globe and the universe. So whatever the outcome, I can promise you that we will continue working to bring you a unique and sincere program week in and week out, 12 months a year. So we thank you for your support of Exopolitics Radio. Please remember to go to www.exopoliticsradio.com and click on the donate menu option for more information. Thank you very much, and now back to the show.
The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are the views of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of our on-air affiliates or our sponsors.
Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio, a weekly magazine format public affairs program on exopolitics, the new political science of outer space, the science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics Radio can be heard on 1480 AM KPHX Progressive Talk Phoenix and worldwide on the internet at www.exopoliticsradio.com. Our audio archives are at www.exopoliticsradio.com, and we urge you to visit them, folks. Our last week's program on the ET commentary on the Freedom of Information documents that have been released about former First Lady Hillary Clinton's pivotal role in White House extraterrestrial intelligence UFO disclosure issues in the first term of the Clinton administration in 1995. That program was described as, quote, hot. So we have some really hot audio archives. Visit them at www.exopoliticsradio.com. They remain available and free to the public 24/7. I am your host, Alfred Weber, and today, after our official Exopolitics Radio commentary, we will continue in this, our creative hiatus, with part one of our interview with Exopolitics commentator Paula Harris on galactic diplomacy. And now our official Exopolitics Radio commentary on, is Comet 17P Holmes the Blue Kachina, and does it matter? So, let me read this. Is this the age of cataclysm? Beneath the planet's surface, the rumblings of earthquakes are beginning to be heard. A massive destructive force readies itself for New York, Los Angeles, and other major centers of the world population. In the atmosphere, 10,000 years of gradual cooling now portends the coming of another ice age, bearing down upon the industrialized nations of the world. Nuclear confrontation looms as an ever-growing possibility as more and more nations develop this awesome capacity. The bankruptcy of moral leadership in the United States threatens to leave the world adrift as the chaotic forces of nihilism increase. And through the widespread resurgence of psychic phenomena, the notion of a higher, more intelligent power manipulating all of these factors in the game of man's survival begins to take shape and reveal itself in all its threatening omnipotence. What is that from? Is that the Blue Kachina? No. Let's see where that's from. I'm just turning to it right now. That's copyright 1974 by Alfred O. Weber. Yes, that's from the frontispiece. That wasn't written by me. That was written by Berkeley Paperbacks. Of the Age of Cataclysm, is the world as we know it about to end? Yes, that's from my first book, The Age of Cataclysm, published by G.P. Putnam's in hardcover and Berkeley Medallion paperbacks. It was published in Japan as well, and it was the first book to integrate the earth sciences, geology, and seismology with parapsychology and the psychic sciences, examining the prophetic text, prophecy, psychic prediction, the Edgar Cayce prophecies, you know, the whole notion of precognition. So that bears on today's commentaries, which is part of Exopolitics, relating to Comet 17P Holmes, and it relates to this whole notion of augury, of signs in the sky, and to the whole notion of, do we need a hard landing? And that is the relationship of human consciousness to a transition from a permanent war economy to what I call the sea future or the exopolitical future, a cooperative, peaceful, sustainable, new energy-based space exploration and space habitation society that is conscious of its being part of a larger populated universe society. Well, today's commentary arises because Comet 17P Holmes, which is now in the solar system, shocked astronomers on October 24th, 2007 with a spectacular eruption. In less than 24 hours, the 17th magnitude comet brightened by a factor of nearly a million, becoming a naked eye object in the evening sky. And it's sort of a golden 2.5 magnitude fuzzball in the constellation Perseus after sunset, and continues to expand and is now the largest single object in the solar system, being larger than the sun. And we're quoting from, you know, Associated Press, CNN, ABC, Reuters. And so, to quote from NASA, NASA's Hubble Space Telescope has probed the bright core of Comet 17P Holmes, which, to the light of sky watchers, mysteriously brightened by nearly a millionfold in a 24-hour period beginning October 23, 2007. Astronomers use Hubble's powerful resolution to study Comet Holmes' core for clues about how the comet brightened. There's some hypotheses about this. It may have been with collision by an asteroid. Some observers hypothesize that, in fact, Comet 17P Holmes may be an intelligently driven artifact to bring new consciousness into the solar system and to assist Earth and other living entities intelligent entities in the consciousness in the solar system to move past this dangerous period of conflict that we here on Earth are experiencing, particularly with the double hazards of a potential nuclear war and ongoing low-level nuclear annihilation through depleted uranium poisoning that is occurring daily on our planet, and also the ecological collapse of our planet, which likewise is being brought about by the ionizing effect of ionizing radiation through depleted uranium warfare, which continues as you're listening to this radio broadcast. So many observers then have raised the question as to whether or not this Comet 17P Holmes fulfills the ninth sign of the Hopi prophecies. And the ninth sign of the Hopi prophecies is the appearance of two sort of signs in the sky, kind of a twin stellar situation, which portends a transition from the fourth world that we live in, the fourth world of kind of, let's call it the permanent war economy. That's something we can all wrap our heads around, and whatever our persuasions, we know that we're caught up in a world that's dominated by a money economy that's run by permanent war, and unless we escape from this, we are headed for mutually assured destruction. And a transition to the fifth world, which is a higher evolutionary plane in which we have left behind these dualities of conflict and can move into a much more sustainable, cooperative, creative, expansive, and interactive with other dimensions of existence. So there are now various commentators who speculate that this may be the prophesized blue kachina, the blue doll, or the blue sun of the Hopi prophecies. Now, one always has to take this with a grain of salt, because the famous 1999 comet, which was to have been the king of terror under Nostradamus, well, you know, it just kind of puffed out, and the king of terror in Nostradamus may have been our oh-so-familiar President George W. Bush. I can say that because he was just a couple of years behind me on the Yale campus. He was just another guy on the Yale campus. What he used to do as president of the fraternity there was to brand the incoming freshman pledges in the fraternity with hot branding irons. I mean, these guys are like substandard. So, you know, he may be like the king of terror in Nostradamus, not a comet in 1999. But, you know, people were saying that, for example, Hale Bopp in May of 1997 was the blue kachina, and that the star SO253059 +165058 was the red dwarf that was the red dawn, the twin blue kachina and purifier, and the red dawn came in May 2003. Well, that wasn't it. So throughout our history, our culture has had a history of projecting this sort of internal desire for purification, for these sort of eschatological events that by purifying our insides, then we want it to project outward, and we have a social purification. So, you know, we grab onto these events. But from the existing astronomers' buzz that nothing quite like Comet 17P Holmes has happened before in recent astronomical memory. And, well, you know, something like a very large blue object. And if you go to www.exopolitics.com, you will see a picture of Comet 17P Holmes, the blue kachina, possibly, you know, if that is a true concept, compared to the sun. What we should always understand is that prophecy is not necessarily written in stone, and these are just guidelines, and they may be like possible alternative futures that do not necessarily have to happen, that can be avoided. And there may well have been alternative futures of catastrophic Earth events or changes here on the planet that may have been avoided precisely by the intervention of upper-dimensional intelligent civilizations that helped elevate human consciousness and help stabilize the planet geologically. If we go back to the book, The Age of Cataclysm, that we wrote in 1973, this was a book that launched the whole, oh, we're going to have huge Earth changes memes. It came out in 1974. And it was followed by a whole bunch of wannabe imitators. It launched, we are the earthquake generation. And then Mr. Scallion came out and did his maps and all of that right after this, working on memes that, in fact, we set out in the world in 1973 and 1974. And none of those memes have happened, or they have happened sort of in slow motion. Why? Because of the intervention of a very intelligent, upper-dimensional plan, which kind of did not allow these catastrophes to happen all at once. And I sort of watch it from afar, having seeded the expression of this in the book, The Age of Cataclysm, very early on, and then having seeded all those memes which express themselves as we are the earthquake generation. One guy even just copied entire pages of the book and had it published by another pulp paperback publisher without attribution. And, you know, Michael Scallion did his whole visioning and everything. And it all goes back to my original book, The Age of Cataclysm, which was the first on the block with, you know, we met with Edgar Casey's grandson and we did the whole thing. And that's where the whole context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication was born. So I think you can still get copies of the book. It's out of print, but if you go to Amazon.com, you can get used copies of the book. But it's very prescient, and it kind of reads like the Blue Kachina. So let's now go to and read, for purposes of this commentary, and I could read you a piece that my spouse, psychotherapist and psychic Jerry DiStefano Weber, PhD, wrote at the time of the King of Terror comet back in 1999, which illustrated why, you know, this thing of projecting onto celestial bodies is very dangerous and difficult. But we're now going to read from the actual sort of an interpretive piece that is a very good expression of the ninth sign of the Hopi prophecies. But first I'd like to read a couple of paragraphs of an article by Angelica Sorain, who is the spouse of Exopolitics Radio commentator Dr. Michael Sala, on the appearance of the blue sun in our solar system. The comet that has exploded and now looks like a blue sun is a great sign of the return of Christ consciousness to the material plane of man. This represents the reunification of the spiritual self with earthly existence. It represents an evolution in consciousness to which many will be exposed, yet only a very few will integrate quickly. This is how Genesis takes place, first on a small scale for a few, who then set the stage for more to follow. The blue sun is the Christ itself revealed, and it begins a cycle of integrations for humanity and the planet that realign cosmic and galactic energies. This brings about the age of enlightenment for humankind on Earth through a slow and rigorous process that strips aside the dualistic nature of common perception and reinstates a balanced connection with levels of reality heretofore denied and unexpressed. Let me repeat that last sentence, because I think it's a very insightful sentence. This brings about the age of enlightenment for humankind on Earth through a slow and rigorous process that strips aside the dualistic nature of common perception and reinstates a balanced connection with levels of reality heretofore denied and unexpressed. Now, I can go back with the Hopi elders back to 1982 at the UN Special Session on Disarmament with the United Nations. I was on an upper floor of the United Nations building, the Secretariat, when I encountered a group of the Hopi elders who were trying to find an office building. I was a delegate both to the UN special session, an NGO delegate to the UN special session on disarmament, and I was an accredited journalist there from a San Francisco newspaper, kind of a beat slash piece newspaper, kind of an underground newspaper. And so I was on one of the upper floors of the Secretariat building there, and on that floor I was walking around. I had shoulder-length hair, I had a long black beard, walking around kind of blue jeans, you know, that sort of dress, and I encountered the Hopi elders and a group of them, and it was magical, and they were looking for a particular office. And I had first gone in the United Nations in 1969, when I started my career as a Wall Street lawyer. I had been educated at Yale University as an international lawyer and spent, you know, many late midnight hours studying international law, really delving into it. When I first started my practice down on Wall Street for the largest international law firm in the world, I really got into that international law stuff. And, you know, to me, international law was like a temple. And when I encountered the Hopi elders there, it was like a magical moment. I said, is this the prophecies? And I helped them there in the House of Micah, the House of Glass, trying to avoid the Gourd of Ashes, the, you know, nuclear war, and guided them into their meeting and helped them. And I said, ooh, maybe I did my bit for the Hopi prophecies at that time. And then I went over my business. Thomas Banyaka, who was the kind of the Hopi communicator, and I would hang out a lot, you know, between sessions. And we used to hang around, kind of lie on the grass together up at St. John the Divine Cathedral, which is where we hung out, and, you know, just as sort of fellow travelers at that time. Well, this is an expression of the Blue Kachina by Dr. Robert Ghostwolf. So let's go. The story of the Blue Kachina is very old, very old. I have been aware of the story of the Blue Kachina since I was very young. I was told this story by grandfathers who are now between 80 and 108 years of age. The story came from Grandfather Dan, the oldest Hopi. It was told to me that first the Blue Kachina would start to be seen at the dances and would make his appearance known to the children in the plaza during the night dance. This event would tell us that the end times are very near. Then the Blue Kachina would physically appear in our heavens, which would mean that we were in the end times. In the final days, we would look up in our heavens and we would witness the return of the two brothers who helped create this world in the birthing time. Pogang Hoya is the garden of our North Pole, and his brother Palongawahoya is the guardian of the South Pole. In the final days of the Blue Star Kachina will come to be with his nephews, and they will return the earth to its natural rotation, which is counterclockwise. The fact is evidenced in many petroglyphs that speak of the zodiac, and within the Mayan and Egyptian pyramids, the rotation of the earth has been manipulated by not so benevolent star beings. The twins will be seen in our northwestern sky. They will come and visit to see who still remember the original teachings, flying in their patuvotas, or flying shields. That sounds like a flying saucer to me. They will bring many of their star family with them in the final days. The return of the Blue Kachina, who is always known as Nanga Sohu, will be the alarm clock that tells us of the new day, a new way of life, a new world that is coming. This is where the changes will begin. They will start as fires that will burn within us, and we will burn up with desires and conflict if we do not remember the original teachings and return to the peaceful way of life. Not far behind the twins will come the purifier. Here is the purifier, the Blue Kachina, and then the purifier, the Red Kachina, who will bring the day of purification. On this day, the earth, her creatures, and all life as we know it will change forever. There will be messengers that will precede this coming of the purifier. They will leave messages to those on earth who remember the old days. The messages will be found in the living stone, through the sacred grains, and even the water. Crop circles have been found in ice. In other words, there were crop circles in 2005 that seem to be the Blue Kachina, and you can see these if you go to www.exopolitics.com. From the purifier will issue forth a great red light. All things will change in their manner of being. Every living thing will be offered to the opportunity to change from the largest to the smallest thing. Those who return to the ways given to us in the original teachings and live in a natural way will not be touched by the coming of the purifier. They will survive and build a new world. Only in the ancient teachings will the ability to understand the messages be found. It is important to understand that these messages will be found upon every living thing, even within our bodies, even within a drop of our blood. All life forms will receive the messages from the twins. Those that fly, the plants, even the rabbit, the appearance of the twins begins a period of 7 years, will be our final opportunity to change our ways. Everything we experience is a matter of choice. Now, this is an aside. This is 2007. If the Blue Kachina appeared now, 2007 plus 7 is 2014. So 2012 appears in 5 years. Okay, back to the text. Many will appear to have lost their souls in these final days. So intense will be the nature of the changes that those who are weak in spiritual awareness will go insane. For we are nothing without spirit. They will disappear, for they are just hollow vessels for anything to use. Life will be so bad in the cities that many will choose to leave this plane, some in whole groups. Only those who return to the values of the whole ways will be able to find peace of mind. For in the earth we shall find relief from the madness that will be all around us. It will be very hard for women with children, for they shall be shunned, and many of the children in these times will be unnatural, some being from the stars, some from past worlds, some will be created by man in a natural manner, and will be soulless. Many of people in this time will be empty in spirit. They will have sampaku, no force in their eyes. As we get close to the time of arrival of the purifier, there will be those who walk as ghosts through the cities, through canyons they will have constructed in their man-made mountains. Those that walk through these places will be very heavy in their walk. It will be almost painful as they take each step, for they will be disconnected from their spirit in the earth. After the arrival of their twins, they will begin to vanish before your eyes like so much smoke. Others will have great deformities both in mind and upon their bodies. There will be those who would walk in the body that are not from this reality, for many of the gateways that once protected us will be open. There will be much confusion between sexes, children, and elders. Life will get very perverted, and there will be little social order in these times. Many will ask for the mountains themselves to fall upon them just to end their misery. Still others will appear as if untouched by what is occurring. The ones who remember the original teachings and have reconnected their hearts and spirit, those who remember, those who their mother and father is, the Pahana, who have left to live in the mountains and forests. When the purifier comes, we will see him first as a small red star, which will come very close and sit in our heavens watching us to see how well we have remembered the sacred teachings. The purifier will show us many miraculous signs in our heavens. In this way, we will know the Creator is not a dream. Even those who do not feel their connection to spirit will see the face of Creator across the sky. Things unseen will be felt very strongly. Many things will begin to occur that will not make sense, for reality will be shifting back in and out of the dream state. There will be many doorways to the lower world that will open at this time. Things long forgotten will come back to remind us of our past creations. All living things will want to be present for this day when time ends and we enter the forever cycle of the fifth world. We will receive many warnings allowing us to change our ways from below the earth as well as above. Then one morning, in a moment, we will awaken to the red dawn. The sky will be the color of blood. Many things will begin to happen that right now we are not sure of their exact nature, for much of reality will not be as it is now. There will be many strange beasts upon the earth in those days, some from the past, some that we have not seen. The nature of mankind will appear strange in these days. We walk between worlds, and we will house many spirits even within our bodies. After a time, we will walk with our brothers from the stars and rebuild this earth, but not until the purifier has left his mark upon the universe. No living thing will go untouched, here or in the heavens. The way through this time, it is said, to be found in our hearts and reuniting with our spiritual self. getting simple and returning to living with and upon the earth and in harmony with our creatures, remembering we are the caretakers, the fire keepers of the spirit. Our relatives from the stars are coming home to see how well we have fared in our journey. So there you have it, folks. This has been an Exopolitics Radio commentary. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned for part one of our interview with Paula Harris, Galactic Diplomacy. Thank you. You're listening to Exopolitics Radio. We'll be right back.
Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber.
This is your host, Alfred Weber. Would you like to download instantly the book Exopolitics by Alfred Weber that founded the field of exopolitics and was a cosmic trigger to a paradigm shift of opening to extraterrestrial civilizations? Would you like to download a CD-ROM of Exopolitics Radio Season 1 uncut version with interviews you have not heard on air? You can do so now by going right now to our website, www.exopoliticsradio.com, and downloading. There is no shipping, there is no waiting. Downloading the book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe by Alfred Weber, and the CD-ROM, Exopolitics Radio Season 1 Uncut Version. You'll be helping yourself, Exopolitics, and Exopolitics Radio into Season 2. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We're going to continue with our interview with Paula Harris, author of Exopolitics, How Do You Speak to a Ball of Light? Thank you. There was, as you also point out in the book, a 1978 unanimous resolution of the UN General Assembly, which in fact recognized extraterrestrial life, which urged members to conduct research programs in extraterrestrial life, and which suggested that a UN office of extraterrestrial life and of the UFO phenomenon be established.
Yes, this is the Grenada resolution, which, you know, I'm wondering, if this was started, what all happened? These are questions. And, you know, when we talk about this, when we talk about the United Nations, we talk about member states and people opening up their files the way that England is now and France is doing it also. We're talking about politics. And that, you know, I was a ufologist for many, many years and know backwards and forwards the field. But when I realized how serious it was, I really came on board with you and Dr. Sala because these are policy issues. And then the interview with Paul Hellyer itself opened up many doors of looking at this in our lifetime as policy issues.
Well, then going on to Protocol 2, you say our stuff or their stuff. That is the question. By our stuff, you mean, are these flying saucers that people report seeing or exotic craft, are they human craft that may be retro-engineered or whatever, or are they true extraterrestrial craft? And one of the big questions here on Exopolitics Radio, Paula, because we launched on March 10th, 2007, which was on the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, which, as you know, was a 2-mile-wide spacecraft witnessed by at least 10,000 witnesses over Phoenix, Arizona. Dr. Lynn Cattai was the very first guest on that anniversary program. And just a week after Exopolitics Radio launched, we like to call ourselves a cosmic trigger. The former governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, went public and said, oh, yes, I too was a witness to the craft back in March 13, 1997, and I think it was extraterrestrial. Now, you address the issue in Protocol 2, that is to say, we have to begin to be able to discern whether the craft that we're seeing are in fact human in origin or extraterrestrial in origin. What's your opinion for the folks here in Arizona and elsewhere that may be listening? What's your professional opinion about what the Phoenix Lights craft was?
No, I think that the Arizona sighting is their stuff. I think for many, many reasons. One of the reasons is that it is not logical that our government would test anything over a major city that big that would cause all that stir, that would bring up all the questions and the problems. And Fife Symington actually says in the movie, in the documentary, Out of the Blue, because I've been talking to James Fox, the producer, that he could only talk after he wasn't governor anymore. I mean, he basically, that interview was done in Santa Barbara after he wasn't governor, so he talked about seeing this. And he could tell the difference between, military and extraterrestrial. I mean, he had a background. I think he had a military background. But, and I also think it was extraterrestrial because it's still happening. I have a witness who contacts me and has sent me film footage of the Phoenix Lights, who is a security guard who works at a cement plant. And he sends me these homemade videos that he's up at 2 and 3 in the morning, and these lights are still appearing over the Estrella Mountains, and they are still, and they dim in and out, and I don't think that we would be testing our kinds of technology there. But, Alfred, I want to add another thing that maybe your listeners know about, the Aviano, Italy footage that's on YouTube. I showed that 3 years ago. It was given to us. It is an up-close UFO. It was given to a bunch of researchers in Italy. It comes out of the woods. The photographer has a tripod. He is videoing this craft. It does a show. It does a circle around a power plant, and it goes very fast into the horizon. And I told the audience when they were looking at it, and they were fascinated, I said, this is our technology, because it isn't logical that the aliens have given an appointment to a photographer to set up his tripod. Then I found out later from military personnel that where that particular craft was over Ponte di Giulio near the Aviano base, which means that was a place where the military does maneuvers. So the location, the kind of craft, and the fact that you have to use all your logic, the fact that it was being done for a photographer shows that it wasn't ours. That it is ours. So the fact that Clark McClellan told me that he had been told when he was working for NASA to look up in the skies when he went on vacation at Belize, he saw two UFOs, he said was our technology. He was told in advance he would see them. That's in my book. So, you know, this is a problem. It's the protocol. We need to identify what's ours and what's theirs.
Right. Now, you mentioned just in the course of that another issue that I think strikes a protocol as well. We were talking about Governor Fife Symington and talking to James Fox, and you said, of course, quote, while he was governor, he could not speak out. But that I think, that clashes directly with the mission and role and responsibility of the governor of a state. Because here you had a 2-mile-wide craft that flew over Phoenix, Arizona, witnessed by over 10,000 persons, and flew over a good part of the state of Arizona. Jet planes from Luke Air Force Base were sent out after it, and it phase shifted at that point and disappeared reportedly, but more than that, the deputy mayor of Phoenix, Frances Barlow, was petitioned by many of her constituents to find out what this was. There was a genuine community concern. So she brought this matter to the open city council and held hearings on it. And then she held numerous public hearings at the request of her constituents, i.e., she was acting within her job description as deputy mayor. So then the situation, but she was only a deputy mayor. So the governor, of course, had a different role because he commands the National Guard. He commands the entire state. The craft went over the entire state, so that from a protocol point of view, if he personally had seen it, and if he personally believed that it was extraterrestrial, he had a duty to speak out truthfully in his role as governor. So this strikes on the question of protocols, because people will vote for a governor because they believe in that governor's integrity to meet challenges precisely that, like that of the Phoenix Lights. And I wonder if you could comment on that.
Well, you know, Frances Barwood for me is a heroine. She is a heroine. And in my book, I have on page one, Unconventional Wisdom from Unconventional People, a quote from Robert Kennedy, the 20th of November. It says, "Few men are willing to brave the disapproval of their fellows, the censure of their colleagues, the wrath of their society. Moral courage is rather a rare commodity than bravery in a battle or great intelligence. Yet it is essential, vital quality for those who seek to change a world that yields most painfully to change." And the thing is that you know, I put that there because there are very few people that will come forth and risk their jobs. And you know that you know, Frances Barwood risked her job there. And the thing that I criticize Fife Symington the most is not so much for not dealing with it, for the way he dealt with it, bringing out a man dressed in an alien costume and having him take off the top part of his costume is a sign of disrespect. It would have been better for him to have kept quiet and just said, "Look, I promise to look into it, to deal with it," and not ridicule it, because the ridicule was the sign of disrespect for all those people that had the sightings. It takes a courageous person to step to the plate. And we've had very few, Alfred, who will do that while in public office.
Now, we've come to the end of this very brief and exciting segment on this program, but we're going to invite you back for the very next program of Exopolitics Radio, and we're going to take it up at that point, talking about the Chicago O'Hare sighting. We're going to talk about galactic diplomacy, and then we're going to talk about the exopolitics movement worldwide with our very special guest, Paola Harris, international exopolitics author and researcher extraordinaire. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Please stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Well, today we've tackled perhaps one of the most profound and at the same time mercurial and, I should say, I'm looking for a word, enigmatic, although that doesn't quite reach it, topics, which is the use of paranormal information in terms of prophecy and the attempt to project onto celestial phenomena some sort of paranormal significance as to earthly events. Namely, is the appearance of this enormous, larger than the sun, comet 17P Holmes in the solar system, in fact, the Blue Kachina, signaling an opportunity to expand human awareness. Is it an extraterrestrial artifact to expand human awareness? Does it signal the appearance in some predetermined time period within 7 years of a red dwarf or some other astronomical phenomena, which will lead to a purification and perhaps the loss of up to 80% of the life of humans on the planet, leading to the fifth world? Is that, you know, the foretold prophecy? Is that what's happening here? And my experience, having delved into this world now, going back to 1973, we're now in 2007, so that's almost 35 years, and having written The Age of Cataclysm, which seeded the memes for We Are the Earthquake Generation, for the Michael Scallion maps, all, you know, I put those memes out there, he probably picked up on them. And all of that thinking of the 70s and the 80s. So yeah, I understood the kind of responsibility that I have for that. And I went fairly deeply into it. And I have seen what happened with the Casey prophecies, which said, oh, well, in 2001, we're going to have an axis shift. Well, you know, in a way, he said, oh, Japan's going to go under the sea. In a twinkling of an eye, you know, Los Angeles going under, New York's going under. And what I have seen is that whether or not we're going to have a hard landing into the fifth world or into a sustainable, cooperative, peaceful space age society, which is universal or linking up to our cosmic citizenship, interacting with ethical, upper dimensional, off-planet cultures, really is a product of the elevation of our own consciousness and our ability to interact and be like upper dimensional ethical civilizations, which our higher selves are. If we are such, then our fear and our duality do not have to be the controlling factors here. And we do not have to create the wars and create the earth changes, which would result in the need for a purifier. So, as they say, you create your own future. So, I would urge you to go back and listen to the first part of the program and listen to the Red Dawn and see, gee, do we really need a purifier, or can we all begin to do Armageddon and purification within and then just have a soft landing? This is Exopolitics Radio, which is produced by Phoenix Productions in conjunction with 1480 KPHX, Progressive Talk Phoenix, executive producer Richard Romero Sr., director R.V. Romero, producer and editor Chris Romero. I'm your host, Alfred Weber, wishing you a wonderful, miracle-filled, and blue kachina, and soft landing always, with much gentle purification, day, week, and life. Thank you.